Greetings, everyone. I'm Kevin Weiner. You're listening to Beyond Everything Radio. Guess what? I have another question for you. What does it mean to have our being in God? In some ways, our world is not unlike the ancient world of Athens. And Paul's sermon there opens up the God conversation to a theology that has tremendous liberating power. Surprisingly, this power doesn't come with a contest of who has the bigger God. In fact, it doesn't come from a religious framework at all. Join me now as we look deeper at Paul's theology of living, moving, and being, as it enables us to see beyond everything. Hello, everybody. Kevin Weiner here. Welcome to Beyond Everything Radio. I'm so glad to have you here. So glad for all of those listening to 670 KLT right now, live on Sunday afternoon, and those of you who are streaming it through the app Streama throughout the country, and also those in the virtual space listening to the podcast a week behind. Welcome, everybody. I'm so glad that you're a part of this growing online family. It's really neat to hear from you and learn from you. You know, if you hear something that I say and you think, man, I think you got that wrong. You know, I would love to have a dialogue with you. I'd love to hear your feedback, any positive or constructive criticism. I'm open for that as well. But I need you to reach out and get a hold of me. And the best way for you to do that is to go to my website, kevinweiner.com. It's spelled K-E-V-E-N. I spell Kevin like the number 7. So go to kevinweiner.com and sign up for Winder's Windshield. And in that, you'll get my newsletter. It'll come every week to your inbox, and it'll have all the links to everything that's going on, and you will have an opportunity to write me an email. Just give me direct feedback, and let's engage in a conversation. That's the neat thing about online ministry, is that it is bi-directional. I do get to engage with so many of you, and it's really, really neat. So I want to invite those of you who've never written, those of you who haven't called, or those of you who haven't signed up to be a part of this family and to take that first step. Go to kevinweiner.com, sign up for Winder's Windshield. Now, if you haven't been tuning in over the last 4 weeks, we are in week 5 of looking very closely at Paul's sermon in Athens at the Areopagus. Some people call it Mars Hill. And we're at a point in the sermon where we're going to talk today about living, moving, and being. Living, moving, and being. And I know that you have an idea if you have some kind of Bible understanding. You know exactly where I'm going, right? Well, stay tuned, because I'm not going where you think I'm going. In fact, there's going to be something in here that may surprise you, and I hope that you stick around for it. And so what we've done over the last month or so is break down Paul's sermon in Athens as a way of really opening up the modern God conversation. You know, sometimes we need to look deeper at things, or else we end up skimming over the depth of our life, right? And finding the deep water that is our life is a very spiritual practice. And skimming is just too easy to do in our modern culture, where we just go for little sound bites. We just want to get little nuggets. We don't really want to take the time and invest. And when we come to a Bible story like this, it's really easy to just read the story and skim over all the nuances. So that's why we've spent a month on this. And I'm kind of deconstructing it so that we can understand it and really get our heads around Paul's theology. You know, as modern people, we don't possess the historical framework or a context to really understand this story. I mean, none of us really live in Athens, do we? Well, maybe you do. It'd be great to hear from you if you do actually live in Athens and are listening to this. But we also are 2,000 plus years removed from this culture. And so the things are different, but also some things are the same. And so it's really easy for us to just import into Scripture our own presuppositions and our own theological frameworks and our own ideas. And when we do that, that's called eisegesis, E-I-S-E-G-E-S-I-S, eisegesis. And that's the opposite of exegesis, which is the reading out of Scripture, taking what Scripture is actually saying and understanding it. And those two terms basically fall under the heading of hermeneutics, which is a big $4 seminary term for how to interpret the Bible with the most precision and care that you can. And so eisegesis, which is reading into the Scripture or bringing into the text your own ideas, it causes the Bible to say what we want rather than what it actually says. You know, and I think we really need to be careful so we can avoid this mistake. And I'll tell you right now, I work really hard in my interpretive skills, but I am not perfect. And so if I miss something, if you think my bubble has slid off center, write me. Let me know. I'm more than happy to make any changes to things where I made a correct. I'm very humble. I'm not dogmatic about it. But I want to say all this. Why? Because we know that out there, if we talk about the Bible, people get kind of pushy. They kind of push back, I should say. And that's because so many people just turn the Bible to say whatever they want. And it's an easy thing to just say, well, you can make the Bible say whatever you want, so, you know, go away. And we want to highlight the fact that there's a process of really trying to understand what it's saying. And I give myself to that process. I'm not perfect, but I want you to know that. And so today, for a structure of our time together, I'm going to start by really giving you the context. And I need to give you some Greek history in order to do that. And this is going to really illuminate Paul's approach, Paul's theology, and how Paul is addressing the God question, which we've been focusing on for the last 4 weeks. And the God questions is something that we all have to deal with. It's something that we all try and make sense of. It's a framework that we all have to try and understand within our own frameworks, right? And when we look at how Paul is addressing the God question, we're going to have to continue to contrast Paul's theology with what we actually see in the modern church. I mean, if we're going to shine a light, we have to shine a light. And if there's a difference between the way Paul is doing something, who is an apostle of the church, and the way the church is actually doing it, then a correction is in store. And we need to highlight that in a loving and a corrective way, right? So then the last thing that we're going to do after we do that is we're going to touch on the implications that kind of bubble up from Paul's what I call alternative orthodoxy. Okay, so the first thing we're going to do is look at a Greek philosopher and poet who came from Crete, who lived in Athens, and his name is Epimenides. I'm not sure if you know that name. He lived around the 6th century BC. Within the Greek culture, he gained kind of a quasi-mythical status after he reportedly fell asleep in Zeus's cave for 57 years. And right there, you know that we're entering into this place of myth. And that is part of the Greek culture. And if you're kind of from the scientific worldview, just let me remind you that myth does not mean it's not true, right? Myth means it's true on an entirely other level. For instance, I don't need to know that Mount Crumpet exists. I don't need to be proven that there is a real Grinch in a real place called Whoville to understand that the story of the Grinch in Whoville is a story about a transformed heart, and that a transformed heart is a very true story, and it's true on a completely other level, right? So it can be a myth. It can be story because it's accessing something beyond the actual story. Okay, and we need to know that about the Greek culture. And so when Epimenides says he fell asleep for 57 years in Zeus's cave, then he woke up. And when he woke up, he was essentially a prophet. And he basically went around Athens purifying it from smaller deities, you know, and these smaller deities that came from Crete and other unorthodox beliefs had been teaching that Zeus had died, or that Zeus was mortal, not immortal. Now, what you may not realize is that Paul actually quotes Epimenides twice in the New Testament, once in Titus 1:12, where he says, "One of the Cretans, a prophet of their own, said, 'Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons.'" Right? So Paul is actually quoting Epimenides here. And why is he saying that the Cretans are always liars and evil beasts? Well, it's because Epimenides was going around trying to, basically help them address what was blasphemy, in that Zeus was immortal. And he's trying to basically say that the Cretans were lying about Zeus's mortality. Okay, and he's talking about that. Paul is talking about that in Titus 1:12. Now, the second quote of Epimenides is found within the passage that we've been exploring for the last 4 weeks in Acts chapter 17. But rather than read the text of the scripture today, I'm actually going to read you the original poem from Epimenides. Okay, and I think this is going to be a really insightful way for you to kind of gain some wider perspectives. Here it is. They fashioned a tomb for you, holy and high one. Cretans, always liars, evil beasts, idle bellies. But you're not dead. You live and abide forever. For in you we live and move and have our being. Ha ha. You see now? Now we have a context, don't we? Right? Now we have a context for this scripture, and we can kind of see what Paul is actually doing here. See, Paul is not playing, my God is bigger than your God, with those at the Areopagus. And man, I've heard this sermon preached so many different times, and I've read books about this passage. And it seems like each time, and even in the history annals, it's often reported that Paul is there to convert the pagans, right? It's his new faith, his new alternative religion against theirs. And he's not doing that. He is not playing, my God is bigger than your God. He's actually affirming their belief. He's not undermining it at all. He's not trying to convert them away from this belief either. What he's doing is something that's bigger on an entirely other level, right? He's completing their belief by providing a wider framework for them to understand their faith in a new way. Now, that is something that's really, really interesting. Now, let me ask you, how many Christians do you know just run with this passage about living, moving, and being in a God that never dies, right? Because you read it in the scripture and you had no idea that it came from somewhere else. But we take that passage and we run with it as the voice and the teaching of God without the slightest thought that it was originally written about Zeus. And what about the Christians who diminish Greek mythology as untrue, but then live a binary life of Platonic dualism, right? Where they basically follow Plato by separating everything between the sacred or the secular, between the valid and the invalid. I mean, how many binary Christians do you know that they live between right and wrong, good and bad, up and down, you know, flesh and spirit? Everything's a duality. It's a binary framework of good and bad. Well, you can thank Plato for that. And this is why so many folks have said, and I've quoted before, how most Christianity is really modeled after Plato in the modern world and not Christian and not Christ itself. So I know that's kind of a sobering clunk wake-up call, but it opens up something for us, right? Paul's approach is hidden between the lines here. You see, other religions are not a problem for Paul because he's inclusive. He's not exclusive. You see, his theology is bigger and wider than the others. In verse 27, he says that God is actually not far from each one of us. That's very, very different from the idea that I've got the secret recipe and you guys don't. Right? He's saying that God is actually not far from each one of us. And he's using the term God, and when he thinks of God, he's thinking of Yahweh, because he's Jewish, and when they think of God, they're thinking Zeus. And so there's a unique and very interesting dynamic about how we approach people of different faiths. And this statement clearly shows Paul doesn't see himself as being so close to God while these are the pagans that are far away. That's a statement of otherness. And there's the eisegesis that the church imports into the text so often. But if we pull out of the text what is actually there, we see something very different. And there isn't a distinction between the people, between their faiths. He's simply saying, yep, I get it. I've come from a similar thing just like you. You've got a lot of temples. I came from big temple. So what does the church look like today then, if it adopts Paul's posture? And man, if you're a church planter, if you're a pastor, if you're on a deacon board, elder board, or you're involved in your church, I hope that you can take this and engage in a discussion and say, man, we really need to rethink maybe our posture towards the culture. That could really create some positive change. You know, later when Paul talks about God appointing a man that will rise from the dead in verse 31, the Greeks really want to hear more about that, but not for the reason most of us think, right? Again, here's the eisegesis where we import into the scripture our own ideas. You see, most Christians will presuppose that the Athenians' interest is in Jesus. And that is partially true, right? But their interest was more likely about proving Zeus's immortality, that he had immortal power. You know, and so if Zeus, which is their framework in which they're hearing this, appoints a righteous man, then that man is probably worth learning about. See, so Paul essentially helps them come to Christ by way of Zeus. And that is an amazing posture towards people of a different faith system. He's not diminishing it. He's not trying to give an apologetic or prove that they're wrong. He's not arguing. He's not on the offense. He's simply using their system of faith and then completing it into something wider by bringing them to Christ by way of Zeus. That's amazing. And so what we learn from this passage then is that living and moving and being, these are all experiences. They are not religious activities. They're not frameworks of achievement. They're not frameworks of self-promotion or of good works. You know, it's not that we can avoid good works. This passage is just not focusing on that. Yes, faith without works is dead, like it says in James, but this passage is talking about something different than our doing. It's talking about our being. Being is so important, and this one really highlights it out, right? And he's saying that living, moving, and being are experiences, and they're not dogmas. They're not rituals of doing. They're ontological, which is another seminary $2 term for being all about being. It's about being. It's about who we are, whose we are. You see, they're about existing. Life and breath and everything are all encompassing. If you have life, breath, and everything, everything's included. Everything belongs. Everything is perfect in some regard. Right? Living, moving, and being is accessible to all creation. So Paul takes the poem about Zeus and basically says, look, guys, my belief in God is exactly the same, even though I come from a different religion. The problem with both our religions is that neither is big enough. That's why he went into this thing about, you know, God is not living in a temple made by human hands and served by man as though he needed anything. Right? He's saying, look, I get your religious frameworks. It's just that it's not big enough. And despite the infinite scale and power of God, right? Paul had no problem talking about a very big God, you know, because he comes from the Jewish worldview. But guess what? The Zeus worldview is that Zeus is a very big God too. And he didn't back away from that. He didn't try and argue that, you know, Zeus was something other than Yahweh. What he's saying is that despite the infinite scale and power of God, the dwelling place of God is not in all these temples. It's within us all. The place of experiencing the infinite power in this everyday experience of living and moving and being is within us. Our temples are too small, and that is why the Athenians really wanted him to come back and hear more. That's an amazing frame shift for a very religious culture, right? And living, moving, and being are not limited to Sunday morning for us, are they? Right? It's not like you just go to the church service and that's the only place you can meet God. It's not like God only hangs out on Sunday morning, because if he did, then the Saturday night services would be without God. But of course, God is with you on your drive in to church. God is with you on your drive back to church. And God is there if you choose to go running instead of going to church. You know, I often just throw a leg over my mountain bike and go riding. Many people go up and go skiing. And I know that if you're a pastor and you're trying to run a delivery system on the weekend, that's not a popular thing to say. But guess what? People out there, God is wherever you are. That's Paul's theology. You don't have to make it about coming and being some over here or up there. And if we can wake up to this reality, we can really appreciate Paul's theology in a new way. You know, God dwells only in the eternal moment. He never dwells in the past. There's no such thing as the past. He never dwells in the future. There is no such thing as future with God. He's beyond all time. And so all he can be is right here and right now. And so the presence of God is only found in the present moment. And the present moment is simply wherever you are right now. Right now. Whatever's happening to you, whatever you're facing right now is the presence of God. This is kind of like Moses realizing he was on holy ground. It's like that the ground all of a sudden was different. It's that he finally had the awareness that this is where God is. And that made it holy, right? The present moment is the most holy place ever. And as soon as we gain that awareness within, we have an inner experience that is truly transcendent. You know, and a lot of times people are confused about how do we handle those with different religions. And so often in the church, we just train people to steer clear of religion and politics. Or, you know, now we see kind of a movement or a trend to be on the offense, to attack or to criticize those of differing beliefs, to shoot holes in every religion and every faith system and every scientific perspective, as though we needed to just constantly be proving and proving and proving the veracity and the truth of God. This is not a defense. That's an offense. And actually, it's that offense that is the reason I think churches are shrinking today. Churches are shrinking, if you haven't noticed. And there's a huge trend online. And man, the last 5 years of being an online pastor, I can tell you that I have seen this huge movement of people leaving organized religion of all different denominations and all different faiths. And they're not throwing God out. They're not becoming secular. They're becoming spiritual, but not religious. This unaffiliated, unattached kind of spirituality has created an amazing ministry opportunity in the online world, and I love being at the forefront of it. And it's quite interesting, and I know that the church has in the past kind of taken shots at this spiritual but not religious crowd, but we need to be honest about what's happening and why this move is taking place. The organized religion model has wounded so many people. It confuses so many people. And unfortunately for many, it doesn't answer the questions that the culture is actually asking. It's trying to constantly be on the defense, and it's using fear and threat and things like that. Now, that's not every church. Of course it's not. And I do support churches and you going to church and being a part of it and all of that. But we need to have our eyes open also. Maybe our church isn't as good as it needs to be. And you can either stick around and try and make it better, or you can move on and find inner experience in another framework. So this is interesting, and I believe the trend to be spiritual but not religious is actually a move toward conformity to Paul's theology. Because after the road to Damascus, Paul, while he didn't abandon his Judaism, he certainly was not in the same framework, right? He would see himself as very spiritual but not religious. He doesn't stick to the rules in the same way that he did in the past. They don't have the same purchase on his soul. And it's a category of great expansion and inner awareness. And this is what's happening in our world. It's very, very exciting. And so if you are a pastor, church planner, or leader, I hope you're taking notes, paying attention, and you're going to make some changes so that you can better serve a population like that who is spiritual but not religious. And then you can answer questions about diverse religious perspectives in a way that is inclusive and not exclusive. And so the test of our faith, as you know, is not about professing to believe, right? It's not what you say you are. It's not in our status within a particular religion. It doesn't, just because you're a deacon, elder, pastor, whatever it is, that doesn't make you or validate your faith in any way. You see, the test of faith is in how we are experiencing God. Another way of saying that is, how are we experiencing this present moment? How are we living? How is it that we move? Who are we as a being, right? We're human beings. We're not human doings. And yes, our doing is very, very important. But today we're talking about the being side of that, right? So how do we live? How do we move? How do we be? How are we experiencing this moment? Now we have come a full circle back to the very first episode that I started. Do you remember? The question was, who or what is God? And I showed you that that question takes us outward towards religion. But Paul shows us that God is the ground of all being. And so if we start with being, if we start with the present moment, we have access to God in a way that's totally different than going about it from the other way. And that's why I started this whole series with the need for a new question. And so what happens when we just go for a walk, right? When we just go for a walk, just be in your life now. Don't try and pretend to be more spiritual than you are. Don't try and do something that you've always learned was more spiritual, as though God is going to listen more, pay attention more, do more for you if you have something like that. Just go out your front door. Just go for a walk. What happens when you reflect upon your life's path, when you reflect upon how things are going, right? You're actually having a very deep inner experience. You're having a spiritual process of growth and awareness. The ground of God, or the ground of all being, is always with you. It's always with me. That's Paul's premise here. And that is the healthiest place for us to start or restart our soul. Yes, some of us do need to restart. Maybe you got off the wrong track. Maybe you're confused by your faith. Maybe you're kind of burnt out. Maybe you're at the place where you're just going to chuck the whole thing. Don't. Just restart it. Restart today with a new framework, a new place of meeting God that's just right between you and God. And that's what, you know, Paul says in Romans 14, your faith is between yourself and God. And perhaps the path right outside your front door is your road of inner experience. How do you know unless you get out there and go? Just be in your life. See, how will you experience this moment becomes a profoundly spiritual question. It becomes the question that opens up a new theology or a widened theology that we've always possessed. So the question is will you stay distracted and skim over life? Or will you learn to be here now? If you learn to be here now, I promise you will learn to see beyond everything. Greetings, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder from Beyond Everything Radio, and I really want to encourage you to go to my website right now and sign up for Winder's Windshield. That's my weekly newsletter, and you can find it at kevinwinder.com. When you sign up, you'll join all the others in the virtual space. Each Sunday morning, you'll get a link to my blog, my radio program, and my podcast. You'll be the first to access new content, uncoaching opportunities, and webinars, and so much more. Sign up now and you'll get a free e-version of my book, Getting Better When You Can't. Now, go to kevinwinder.com and remember, I spell Kevin like the number 7. Go to kevinwinder.com and look for Winder's Windshield and sign up today.